Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, once again, as always...
It's Ben Vanel here, Tommy. I'm going to rush through the intro this time because I'm afraid that my internet or whatever happened before might cut out again. It's Adam Knox also on the show. Hi, Adam.
Yeah.
We're rushing the whole episode.
This is our second take. We're going to do this as quickly as possible. If anyone's listening on 2x speed, I apologize, but it's going to be naturally 2x speed anyway. My doorbell rang before as well.
Yep.
Because I've got illegal visitors. I mean a package coming around. So.
Yeah, we had a hot two. We had a hot 2 minutes on tape, and then Zoom just absolutely shit itself. So that one is gone forever, guys. But if you sign up to the Patreon, we are going to be dropping that 2 minute snippet on the $100 tier. So if you pay us $100 for this month, you can hear Adam get a package. Then you can hear all of us going, hello,
you guys both rose.
You know what? Let's just start again.
I guess is
this is false advertising.
It's kind of cool to get a peek into the mind of Adam Knox. You'll get to hear what his doorbell sounds like if you join that tier.
Yep.
Which is a very exclusive.
Way
sneak
too
peek.
Loud and yeah. The official fucking what was his name? Jimmy.
Oh that's yeah, Jimmy. Yeah. Jimmy the doorbell. Wow.
Oh,
that's a
Jimmy.
Deep cut.
Jimmy the doorbell. Yeah. I can't even remember what that was in reference to, other than obviously
neither.
Being a doorbell.
I think it was us inventing a stupid video game character, like the dumbest one of all, like worse than Bubsy, was Jimmy the doorbell.
Oh, yeah.
I think that might have been.
I guess that would be bad.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That sounds like right. Something that you say 3 years ago and 3 years older be like, maybe...
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago, I was a fucking idiot, but that'll never happen again. And then in 3 more years from now, I'll listen to this and be like, you dipshit,
yeah.
Fucking hell.
Why didn't you guys prepare something for the podcast you do every single week that people love? But,
well, I'll have forgotten in the future, though, that we were working on our PAX thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We are doing a presentation for PAX. PAX is all online this year, obviously, as is everything. It's free to watch. It is our bit is happening on the 16th of September at 10:30 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time.
Pacific time in the US.
Sorry,
it's like 3 p.m. here or something.
Yeah.
Pacific time. In the US, so look up and adjust for wherever you are on PAX 3 is the channel that we are on. We've got a... we've finished it, we've sent it off, we've pre-recorded a thing. It's something a bit different and also something a bit familiar in the same package. It's a bunch of sketches and stuff that we've done that I think came out great. And then we did like a new Bandcamp style premium episode, the video of which you'll see half an hour of, and then we are going to be putting that full thing up on the Bandcamp after that presentation has happened. So tune in, and
that'll be another one of the it's free to listen to, but you can pay what you want if you like once.
Yep.
So technically not premium.
True. It's just
premium,
on Bandcamp.
I think means. Yeah.
I've shown.
I don't want to. Again, my whole thing today is going to be anti-false advertising. So if any of you say anything that seems as though,
you're going very much against the grain of the gaming industry, then Knox. That's
that's me, Mr. Negative.
It's going to be up to you if it's premium or not. Like, if you pay, you can pay what you want. True. So, you know, true, you could pay us $1,000 for it, and then it's the most premium thing that we've ever done in your eye to that one person. Mm. It'll be ultra premium.
But that's a tip. Like, if you if you go to a restaurant and you tip a waiter $1 million, do you know how a premium waiter?
Yes.
I guess a person can't be premium.
The experience would be.
Yeah, if you go,
it must be right. It's a reverse cause and effect.
No, because if you just go to McDonald's but you give them $1,000, you don't suddenly have a golden crusted fillet of fish.
Well, I'm assuming that you've done that because you had a premium experience. You'd have to be a complete fucking idiot to donate $1 million via a tip for a shit experience.
Well, you're doing it beforehand, though, is the point. It's happening prior to you knowing you're going to get a premium quality experience. Mm,
true. No.
Anyway, not to put people off of it. It is good. But
that's the thing.
I'm not saying I'm happy to guarantee the McDonald's of podcasting.
I'm happy to guarantee it is a premium quality experience, but you can pay what you want.
Exactly. What's the advertising word they use for bargain when they don't want to make it sound cheap? Affordable?
Value?
I guess they don't do it. They jack the prices up artificially because they fucking want you to think that it's worth the price, right? That's the whole thing with cars, certain types of luxury cars.
Yeah, yeah. Rugs. And you see it a lot in rug shops, right? Every rug shop, there's a sale on, but the prices are always 20% higher than they would have been anyway. That's our podcast.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I do love the idea of like trying to boast to people and go, went out for a pretty fancy meal last night, like dropped a pretty penny. Like, oh, where'd you go? Like Attica, Flower Drum? Nah, went to Macca's and just slipped the guy behind the counter a few $100. Yeah, pretty.
Wow.
Really treating the missus sounds last premium night. Really took her out for an expensive meal.
For that money, though, I convinced him to call a fillet of fish a lobster roll.
Ooh.
But yeah, so tune in and check that out because you will be able to get it eventually on Bandcamp, but it's the world premiere of it will be on the PAX channel, and we put a fair bit of work into it, and it looks great. So tune in.
It looks great for being able to film it like at home alone with no equipment because even deliveries aren't happening right now. I'm pretty happy with.
Yep.
Yeah, look a bit. I've showed it to two.
If we'd have filmed it in our normal two people, who lighting and rigging warehouse.
I've showed it to two non-gamers who laughed at all of the sketches. So I think that holds up pretty strongly as just actual comedy. But yeah, obviously there's a bunch in there for filth and for casual gamers as well. I think it's I don't know. I can't imagine it being much better considering it's all like takeoffs of stuff that's filmed at desks anyway. I think it's good shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And so check that out. Let us know what you think, unless you don't like it.
Yes.
Because none of our mental health could withstand getting any kind of negative feedback on our art at the moment.
True.
So, you're entitled to your opinion, but keep it to yourself.
Any form of like conflict or negativity at the moment. I had a spider in my house the other day, and that's not technically conflict, but it is like a bit of a, you know, it's a
threat.
Fight.
Yeah.
It was on my pillow as well. Ooh. I found the spider because I lay down on my pillow, which was on my couch at the time. I've been bringing a pillow to my couch to have a lie down and watch TV. Mm-hmm. If that's a fucking crime, then I guess put me in maximum security where I feel safe and happy because I'm used to that experience now.
Yes.
I'm not saying that lockdown is like prison. If you've been to prison, it's probably harder. I don't know. But point is, I lay down on the pillow and this fucking spider started moving out of the corner of my eye. Like, that's where I saw it from. It didn't crawl out of my eye. And it fucking scared the shit out of me. And then it was about an hour and a half of working up the courage to, like, pick up the pillow and take it outside. Not an hour and a half.
It was probably
6 minutes. But yeah, yeah.
You're such a beta, dude.
Just take it to Macca's and buy it a $100 fillet of fish, and I'm sure it'll suck you off later.
Oh, that's what I'm afraid of, though. I fucking hate spiders. It's my one proper fucking fear.
Really?
Yeah. I can't, I like, no. And I don't freak out or anything. I just tend to like get real. I don't like them, but I deal with it. When I say an hour and a half, it was like 6 minutes and me going like, oh, fuck you, spider, and that sort of stuff. But I took the pillow outside.
I have no,
and slept there.
I have no big fear of spiders, which is probably like the wrong way for a brain to function. Like, if I'm with people and we see one and like people I'm with like freak out and like go to the other side of the room, like I'm always the one who's like, yeah, I don't give a fuck. I'll get in there and get rid of it, which is definite. Like, you have those fears in your brain for protection and self-preservation. Mm. It's like, you know, you're meant to run away from this thing because it could, you know, kill you or like severely harm you. Mm. But yeah, I'm just missing the part of the brain that has those kinds of instincts.
And some other parts as well. I don't have it with snakes.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people get real scared of snakes, and I don't give a shit about them.
Tell you what I'm not afraid of, though. Mm. Chatting about video games
really?
On a podcast with my
it's
boys.
Starting to feel that way.
I'm not afraid of doing it for maybe about 20, 25 minutes this week, but for the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's not much going on. Like, there's a few minor developments in stories that we've already talked probably, like, to death in previous episodes. There's games coming out soon. Like, I've played a demo of Tony Hawk that we'll be talking about next week. The Avengers game dropped. Is that true? Is it actually out
now?
No,
it's on Friday. Maybe it has one of those weird pre-order things where, like, you technically get it a couple days early if you buy the super deluxe edition.
Yeah. But
I played that demo too, Ben. Feels great. Feels smooth. Mm. You don't really do anything in the demo, but just basically getting a handle on the physics and how smooth it all feels. I'm fucking pumped for that
game.
I can't think of a style of game that I would rather play more at the moment than just a very like snappy, challenge-based, like racking up scores.
Yep.
Yeah, I am so fucking down to hit the pavement. Mm.
As someone who went back and played those original Tony Hawk games within the last, like, let's say, 5-ish years, I'm still going to play it and I want to see how they've done it. But, like, it from what I've seen of it, it really does look like a straight up, in the same way that the Crash Bandicoot ones and stuff were, just a remake.
Yeah.
So whether or not it'll appeal that much to me, it does have some of the extra moves and stuff from future games in it, which might be interesting. And it looks nice, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's very impressive that they have, as you say, made it feel so similar when it's a ground-up remake. Like, it's not even the thing where they're running the game underneath it to make it feel the same. They've just made a new game but copied it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was the biggest challenge, right? Getting the feel exactly right. And that classic thing that we talk about a lot with remakes and remasters and stuff is like, it needs to feel how you remember it feeling, not like the same. It needs to recreate like the experience in your head,
even
which is,
with Tony Hawk,
to do.
Though, like, it's so much muscle memory if you played those older ones. Like, it's so burned into your, you know, whatever part of the brain you do have that you, if you get it like slightly wrong, you're really going to pick up on it. So, I'm looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, I'm.
See, I only ever played those games around at friends' houses and stuff.
Oh,
I never
really?
Had PlayStations growing up. I'm familiar enough with them, but it was like, go around to a friend's house, swap the controller around. So, I never really had a copy of my own to just kind of like really sink into and try and do everything. So,
they were all on Nintendo consoles as well, though.
Yeah, I never got them. I had the Game Boy Advance version of Tony Hawk 2, which was like isometric top-down.
Oh, yeah.
Those were fucking cool.
Like, fucking sick. Mm, yeah, they did a... It was amazing that worked as well as it did for being so, like, stripped back.
Yeah.
The little Game Boy Advance versions of, like, the Tony Hawk music be like... That was cool.
Yeah,
speaking of, I did own
both of the first two. And yeah, it's definitely in the muscle memory. I got some good scores on this 2-minute demo, but like these were, I think because they're not a story game, I don't remember them as having like a big place in my personal pantheon of games, but there's a good chance that I played Tony Hawk 2 more than any other game. Like More than Final Fantasy VII, even though I've played it, you know, once a year. Like, these were games that I put fucking hundreds and hundreds of hours in. And I think, yeah, like you said before, Tommy, it's the perfect game for right now. It's a perfect game to sink time into. Because for me, it'll also be a game where I'm like, listen to a podcast or, you know, got some like a football match yeah. on in the corner. I cannot wait to play this game. I'm so excited for it. I played the it was just called like Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD, wasn't it? And it was like on the PS3, maybe? Is that right?
This is the second remake of 1 and 2 that they've done.
Yeah.
And that first one I don't think was received very well. I don't remember ever playing it, but I don't think it was received very well because
yeah.
it failed exactly the things we're talking about where it didn't feel right. And I don't think it was... they nailed that one.
I did play it and I liked it fine. But I definitely think I was not in the critical consensus there. You're right. Like, I remember it getting a bit of flack for feeling a little like stodgy and clunky or something, like a little slow. But again, I played heaps of that one as well because I just love the kind of game so much. It's like that a miniature loop version of sports games, and sports games themselves are so addictive. So yeah, I'm so excited. This is like my most anticipated game now, up there with Cyberpunk probably.
Yeah. And anything with like a time limit where, you know, you just run out before you got to that thing. It's like, yeah, it's like an arcade game almost. Yeah. One thing I will say about these kind of like remaster packages, and it's sort of the same thing with the Crash Bandicoot one where they bring out like, you know, a pack, like it's one disc that's got the series on it. I kind of always find them a little bit overwhelming because I always feel like I should start at the start, but then knowing that you've got just like a whole other game there on the disc and like kind of feeling like you have to switch, you know, between like kind of like wanting to dip into sort of all two or three or whatever it is at once. I kind of wish they'd do like a remaster where it's just like the one game that's just got elements of all. If it's a remaster, just have elements of all of them just bedded into the one thing.
No, don't let them know that you would be willing to pay for them to break all of these remakes into separate fucking games. These are very short games.
Yeah, the opposite.
Like, you can get through all of this.
I think Tommy wants the opposite. He wants them to remove some of the content and combine it all into one package where you get less actual gameplay for the same amount of money.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
I want all
is
of
that
it
he's
just in one big overall thing. Yeah, it's like.
But that's what this is.
That is what this is. What are you talking about?
That's exactly what this is.
Did you take a fucking kickflip to the head in real life? A big old fucking board?
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't this a thing where like on a, it's like you the first thing you see when you turn it on is like you choose whether you're playing like Tony Hawk 1 or Tony Hawk 2, right?
I don't know how it works for this one, but there was Tony Hawk 2X on the Xbox, which was only released to the United States of America. Right? Mm-hmm. To the Xbox. Mm-hmm. But that just had all of the levels in kind of the one menu and just combined the games. And I'm assuming that's what this one's going to do.
That is also, what I assume, Nox. Because it is a sports game, this isn't Crash Bandicoot where there's a loose narrative and a series of levels that increase in difficulty. I kind of assumed this was all fucking levels. What would you call them? You know, all maps, all skaters, all customization. It's actually the only game that I've ever given a fuck about a high score in. I remember really genuinely, having that countdown timer and wanting to hit a high score.
Even if it was broken out into separate games, why would that make a difference? Because you're still playing through the levels in an order. And it, like, if you get a game and you're like, why can't I go to the last level now? Break that out into a separate game. Let me buy just the last level.
Yes.
And just play that one. I'm overwhelmed.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I find it hard.
What do you mean there's 4 hours of gameplay
like
in here?
The one.
Give me 1 hour and then break it out.
What do you mean earlier when you're feeling negative and combative at the moment? I'm not seeing evidence of that at all. You're overselling yourself.
This is self-care. This is me letting it out. This is me dealing with it.
I understand it with Crash Bandicoot though, Tommy. Like, I know what you mean. Like, I would happily pay $15 just to get Crash Bandicoot 1 remastered. I did have that, I think, exactly the same temptation, and I did it when I bought that remaster pack of like playing a few levels of one, jumping over to 2, being like, oh, this is actually better. It has more stuff in it. Trying a bit of 3, going back to 1, not really knowing where to put my time. But this is the perfect game for it. Like, like I said, it's more of a sports game.
Yeah, for sure.
You can just jump around and do different stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, you can jump around and do tricks. That's what the game is. That's the core mechanic of the game, jumping around.
Yeah. I guess it's the same with just like when 2 big things that I want to play come out on the same day. Like, I have a hard time, like, really, really enjoying something, knowing like, oh, should I chuck on that other one and see what that's like? Should I like dip into those other? Anyway, whatever.
You're looking at a pair of boobs and being like, which one do I start with?
yeah.
Why don't you only have one?
Which one's lefty. Bigger? I need to do my thorough examination.
Yeah, lefty's bigger, but the first righty has better features. So maybe.
Good Lord.
I don't have that. I have the opposite problem where even if there's something that is like a sequel or whatever that's coming out on its own, I feel compelled to go back and play through everything before it to lead up to it. Do you know what I mean? And like wreck it for myself.
Oh, you idiot. What's wrong with you?
I'm coming into this saying I'm an idiot though. I'm not coming into this saying, here's a smart business idea.
I didn't
say that at all.
I'm pretty sure your words were, here's an anti-consumer idea that I've come up with. You're wagging your finger
in the
actually
air. It ended up being perfect because I said, I wish it was like this. And then you guys informed me it is actually going to be like this. Yeah. So this is a positive story where you guys have made my dreams come true. You two have made my day incrementally better.
I'm willing to bet that tomorrow, the day before the game comes out, there is going to be an announcement from Activision saying, we've just found out we could split this into 2. And you're going to wreck it for everyone.
It's like the anti-make-a-wish. Like, it's not like I'm sick and I get a wish. This kid's healthy and we want to fuck
him make
over.
A wish. Yeah. It's make-a-wish, but you make a wish on a monkey's paw.
That's like if you just walking around the street looking for kids who look like they're breathing a little too comfortably.
Yes.
Going up to them and being like, what's your nightmare,
too
kid?
Smart.
Well, make it happen.
That's great. The Make a Nightmare Foundation for healthy children to fucking just bring them down. It's like it's too hard to make sick kids feel better. So what we can do is just level the playing field and make healthy kids feel worse.
We had to shut down the whole fucking city to pretend this kid was Batman. So instead, we're just getting every other kid and telling them their parents are getting divorced. And now we've saved like $6 million. It's awesome. Because of that urge to play the thing previous to the thing I actually want to play, I've been playing through Destiny 1 again recently.
Oh, okay, right.
Because I wanted to go back to Destiny 2 and play all of the shit that they're going to delete. Just the fact that they're taking it away. I wasn't probably ever going to play it if it had stayed in that game. But now that I know it's leaving, I want it more than ever.
Mm.
Which is the case with games and with... Anyway, but
say it.
No,
say it.
Everyone understands where that was going. But so,
less is more.
I've been playing Destiny 1 again, and it still is the exact same game. There's no point in reviewing it again, but the shooting in that is still fun, and it's still really weird and slightly bad in a bunch of other ways. But the point is to go through that because I've got enough time as well now to just fucking play through the main stuff of Destiny again before Destiny 2. The point is that I'm going to lead up into playing all the Destiny 2 shit. Mm. And then that actually will be new stuff and I can be the Destiny fucking guy.
The Destiny guy. Cool.
That's my fate.
I've been playing a game called Moon, which I think I mentioned last week. Has just come out on the Switch. It's a PlayStation game from 1997 that never got a Western release. It never got translated. It's finally received an English translation and other languages, I believe. But it was kind of a cult hit back in the day. Playing through it, I've only played a little bit of it, but it's kind of not hard to see why it, like, at that time, it probably would have been considered too risky of a game to bring over to the West because it's very strange. It's I think it's the tagline of it is it's a remix RPG. It's basically it's sort of a takeoff and a riff on the tropes of RPGs. The start of it is you're a little kid playing this video game that is a very by the numbers RPG that you kind of control, but you're just basically like you don't do any actual combat in this first section of it. You're just kind of like clicking through. It's just basically setting the scene. Very tropey. You're a hero going off to defeat a dragon. There's a town. You talk to some townsfolk. They all have very, you know, paint by numbers bits of dialogue of like, go hero, we all believe in you, all that kind of stuff. You know, very much drawing on the tropes of especially back in the like kind of mid-90s. RPGs, hero kind of goes off, kills a couple of baddies, off in a field. The little kid in the game, then he stops playing the game, he gets sucked into the game, and is now a ghost who finds his grandma who seems to remember him from having passed away quite some time ago. And you then the main mechanic is you are kind of, as this ghost kid, following around in the path of the hero that's in the game. And after he's killed these enemies, you have to kind of bring them back to life by finding their spirits and kind of catching them. And so the basic loop of it is you have this energy meter that dictates kind of how far of a radius you can go from this little house that you live in. And the more good deeds you've done and the more you build up this meter, the further out you can go. So you kind of have this very narrow thing to start with. You have to kind of find the little, like, you have to build up your love meter by doing nice things for people, by bringing these creatures back to life. And then the more of that you do, the bigger your meter gets. And then obviously, like, more of a radius you can travel in, meaning that, you know, you can reach further edges and do more of these tasks. Mm. That's kind of what it seems to be. It's pretty complex. I've just discovered, like, right before we started recording this, that the company that's put it out, scanned and translated the manual and put it up because it is very of its time in that, you know, this is an era where, you know, a game often came with a manual that you know, would have to kind of look through to figure out certain things about it. It's a straight up port, so it doesn't really, for better or worse, it's very of its time. Like,
is it 2D or 3D?
It's 2D. It's like top down.
Yeah.
So it's it's kind of sprite based.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it kind of playing through it, it would be awesome if they had just done a full like remake of it.
Right.
Like it does you do have to forgive it a lot in a lot of areas because it's from 1997, like the movement is a little slow and a little clunky, but it's got a really cool art style, it's got a really like weird tone and vibe and personality to it, and yeah, I want to study this manual and really push through with it because it's it's doing a lot of really weird different stuff, and it's not hard to see how people kind of really took to it in Japan when it came out because it's really like flipping the whole sort of tropey stuff on its head.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, a lot of comparisons to Undertale in the stuff that I've read about it. That's sort of like non-combat. And also very meta, like it's like you said, it, you know, it starts with the framing device of someone playing a game. It's obviously ripping on the tropes of RPGs, but yeah, this is something that came out what 23 years ago. This is like a really early forebear of the kind of also Doki Doki Literature Club and Undertale. Yeah, the games that are deconstructing gaming as an art
form. Even an indie game kind of thing. Like, you know, in the way of like, yeah, being a little like outside the box. Like even the very start of like the game within the game that you're playing, it brings up a bit of text giving you a bit of backstory, and it quickly, you know, you go to one page and then you go to the next page and it starts moving really quickly. And then there's there's one page that's just like this huge, huge block of text that it gives you like 2 seconds to read because it's just the most bullshit.
Right.
And then the dragon plunged the land into dirt. You know, it's just like super, like really, you know, overdone kind of stuff. And it, like even the when you're the kid playing the game, the villagers are all giving you very dull two lines of dialogue of just like, sunny day today, isn't it? And then when you go into the game, you can tell that they're the same villagers, but they look different. Like they've got like a different kind of more interesting sort of fucked up looking design. And when you talk to them, they have heaps more personality. So when you're actually within the game, all of a sudden this like, you know, it's almost like a, I don't know, like a Toy Story Wreck-It Ralph kind of thing where you're seeing like behind the scenes of like what these characters are really like outside of just when someone's playing the game. Like their actual real lives are sort of like a lot better written and they're a lot funnier. And yeah, it's well worth a look, but you do have to be very forgiving of the fact that it's straight up a 23-year-old game.
Yeah.
With no...
This sounds right up my alley. Yeah. I've got a high tolerance for older games and sort of sinking back into that. If they did do a full remake, you know what they could do is split it up into like 8 different parts.
Yes, that's smart.
And then you could just sell every... Yeah, this looks cool as.
Yeah.
I have it's not cool. heard almost anything about this as well, I feel like.
Yeah, it was. I read about it. There was a. I think it was maybe a Nintendo Direct last year, and right. It was. I don't think it was mentioned in the Japanese one, but not in the one in the. So it was like a Nintendo Direct had just been on, and then there was a. I read a story somewhere about like why wasn't this game mentioned in the English language, Direct when. The whole thing that the Japanese one was mentioning was, hey, it's coming out and also we're translating it into English. So it just looked so weird to me and the art style is kind of right up my alley. So it's sort of been on my radar since then. So, I know we mentioned at the start of the episode that we're spinning our wheels a little bit here. So maybe it wasn't the worst thing in the world to have a great game that the description of which took me nearly 15 minutes to get through. I could see both your eyes glossing over, but it really is so fucking weird that you kind of do just need to.
It was the bit where you were like,
go through the whole
when you were like, and then you meet your grandma and all of that. Yeah. I was like, is this like a brown M&M's thing where he's throwing in weird words to make sure we're paying attention?
I was just paying attention.
You press
it's
up
very
and
complex.
He walks up on the screen. Yeah,
the
yeah.
ghost thing and the life meter, but that's all cool because it is like yeah. A twist on I was waiting for the like how is this related to Undertale in because Undertale is like you can avoid combat or you can do different things to make your way through a RPG style game. I guess with Persona as well, you know, you don't have to fight every enemy, you can recruit them and it sounds like it's not just sort of the mechanics that are like a comment on RPG tropes, it's everything about the game almost.
I don't know if we mentioned this as well.
Yeah, I haven't really gotten up to any bits that are combat-based yet. So I don't know if you do any kind of even anything approaching RPG-style combat, but not in the bit that I've seen. Sorry, Adam.
I would imagine that. Well, this is like Toby Fox, who made Undertale, said that this game specifically was like a big influence on making Undertale.
Yeah,
so it's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
It's cool that there's the PS1 for some reason, and I guess the Saturn as well, there's a bunch of Japanese games, especially RPGs, that were never translated. And people make translation patches for them and shit that you can run in an emulator. But this is one that I'm just looking at now that there were multiple attempts and they all kind of fizzled out. So it's cool to have this in English.
I wonder why they fizzled out. It could be maybe because it's so humor-based, it seems like. It's really... Yeah.
Yeah. Those translation and like patching and emulation and all of that sort of like scene, man.
Yes.
There's a lot of, I mean, everyone's doing it for no pay and as a hobby. And there's a lot of different reasons why, but people burn out of that or like go, all right, well, fuck you all. I'm not doing it anymore because like there'll be too much pressure put on them or it'll be like... People will start being shitty about the quality of it or there'll be some fucking infighting bullshit. And yeah, so much stuff. And not that anyone's wrong to do it because it intersects so much with where people are at mentally. Because, you know, if you're the type of person to sit down and make a translation of a 1997 PS1 game in your free time for fun, I'm willing to bet that, you might... be a little sensitive to a joke sometimes as well. I reckon those are personality types that intersect.
Yeah.
Or not even a joke. You might people interested in that shit, like me, might be a little unnecessarily negative and drive you out of it. Tommy, you fucking idiot. So,
well, yeah, it's really sad. One of the guys who worked on this translation is Tim Rogers from Kotaku, an old Kotaku writer. And I think the other challenge too is that often with the kind of translating anything into another language, every language has its kind of like idiosyncratic things about it, where you don't just need to be able to read the language and translate it. You sort of almost need to be a writer yourself, because you're going to have leaps where it's like there's no direct translation for that, or this phrase is conveying a vibe that the direct translation doesn't get across. So I've got to now make the leap and not just be straight up translating this. I've got to basically write my own dialogue for this section.
Yeah.
Because there's no way of just copying it straight across.
The best people to hire for that job would be people like me, who every essay they ever wrote in uni was essentially plagiarized but just completely rewritten. So you just go you can take intent and reword it into different phrases.
Yeah.
Very well, if you have to do it.
Okay, thanks, thanks, Adam, for
you're
this.
Capable of learning.
For the translation of Moon, an RPG remix. We'll just run it through Turnitin, and if it's all clear, we'll be able to put the game out in English.
Nah, I translated this and went to uni back in 2010, so I'm fine.
Oh.
They didn't have it yet, I don't think.
I love when things are just like, straight up, the translation is like very direct and literal, like, so, you know, playing through Persona 5 and playing it in English, like, English voicing and everything. It's always so funny when there's like multiple bits in it where there'll be a character who goes to like one of the other characters, "Whoa, you speak English?" Like, there's a bit where they go to Hawaii and they're like getting Anne to do everything, because it's like, "Well, you're the only one of us that speaks English." It's like, "Whoa, dude, like, you're all, don't you get it? You're all speaking English at the moment." It's just like so bizarre that it's just like, yeah, they've just got to do it direct. Like, they can't pretend that they're not Japanese, because the whole fucking thing is set in Tokyo.
That's the other thing when you see that stuff about the translations not necessarily working in English, is when you do see them just directly translated, everyone's like, "Oh, I get it. It's Japanese. It's fine."
Yeah.
"This is set in Japan with Japanese people. I get that I don't necessarily understand every reference."
Mm.
Like with some of the Yakuza games and stuff like that, how they never translated them because they're like, "Well, they wouldn't understand the cultural references in the West." It's like, "Cunt, I don't understand anything. Give it to me anyway." I don't understand Western games. This isn't an issue.
It would be funny if when they brought it over to the West, they like see that the Sopranos is really popular, and they're like, "Okay, people kind of understand these kind of mob rule things, so they'll understand the concept of Yakuza." But then if they'd brought it over and translated it and just got like Italian Americans to do all the voiceovers for it, so
they're like eating a ramen bowl in a restaurant going like, "This is some good gabagool."
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was actually going to say sushi, but yes.
All right, that's our next pack style. Keep that for our next little thing we can put together.
Just to quickly say, on that stuff with the people in the emulation and stuff as well, it is like, it is so fucking genuinely toxic sometimes, and the translation things, because I've looked into at the forums and never participated in anything there with this stuff, because, you know, fucking old shit and not being able to play it is something that really gets my dumb ass going. So people who stop doing it absolutely have legitimate reasons sometimes, and sometimes are being dicks about it. People who tell people how the quality of their work is sometimes being legitimate about it and sometimes being dicks about it, but it is a very heated atmosphere in those sorts of circles for some fucking reason. I don't know why.
Which is a shame.
Well, I do. I have a guess as to why, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah, I got a guess.
Pure pursuit.
Yeah.
It's such a pure thing to pursue. Yeah. It's like, there's no financial gain or anything like that. It's just like, hey, this game rules. People outside of this country haven't been able to play it and would really enjoy it. I just want people to be able to experience.
The thing that often happens, and it's the same with translations and emulation of stuff, and like even websites that are like trying to pirate games and all of that sort of shit. The thing that seems to create conflict most often is that two of them will start doing the same thing. And then one of them viciously competes with the other one for no profit or gain or anything other than fake fucking internet clout, you know. So it's that I think starts to drive people. There was an emulation guy called Bu, B-Y and then two U's, who made really good emulators for like the Super Nintendo and shit, who recently said like, I'm quitting everything and deleting everything because people keep sending me genuine threats. It's, and I don't understand why. I don't understand what would ever trigger you to threaten someone who, because they were developing a fucking Super Nintendo emulator. Mm. It's such a weird...
I mean, aside from like, Nintendo, obviously. The threat's there.
Well, it wasn't even Nintendo.
Right.
Exactly. If it was Nintendo coming along and saying, hey, guess what? Weird Nintendo, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it'd be like, well, that
we're gonna fuck you,
Mars
loser.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to send you anthrax, bitch. But like, when it's just fucking random people on the internet being cunts to each other, I guess it's just what happens everywhere. We're doomed.
Yeah. Yeah, so... to go back to it, yeah, I definitely recommend checking it out, but I think it's like $20 or so.
Right.
Definitely have to give it. Like, one of the things I found very frustrating with it is, like I said, you get this meter that dictates how far, because you have to go to sleep every night to kind of replenish yourself. So the meter dictates
for the
how
life
far
advice,
out
Tommy.
You can go. And
I've just been fucking just powering through. It's really, it's starting to affect my emotional state. But, okay.
It does get kind of frustrating because you start to move a bit slower when the meter gets lower. And so you go, okay, well, I better get back to the house. And a couple of times I've been like in the front door, but then it's like, and I'm like next to the bed about to get in, and then the meter hits zero, and then you hit game over, and you have to do that whole bit again. And it's like,
right,
I'm fucking there. Like, come on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just things like that, where if they made it now, it would be a bit more of a zone. It would probably be a bit more, you know, there'd be a little bit more concessions to like,
if
well,
you
know,
had just, if you had saved up 3 months worth of extra time just to have as a windfall at all times, then you'd have been fine. If anything went wrong, you should just have had 3 months of time saved up. So that's on you, actually. Asking for time handouts.
But yeah, that's Moon. Check it out, I reckon. Good game. What about you fellas?
I already said the Destiny thing. 1. I did a bit of Destiny, and that was the only thing I played for like a week, and not even that much of it this week. We've been busy.
I forgot to start playing this, but I got Doom Eternal in the mail. I want to play that before the end of the year because it could be, you know, up in my list of favorite games.
Maybe.
Potentially. I did love Doom 2016. But yeah, I'm excited for that.
This is pretty... I don't know if I remembered to mention it on this. I finished Doom Eternal not that long ago.
Right.
And it's super fucking different to the 2016 Doom.
Mm.
It's like almost a different genre of game where, you know, Doom was obviously a shooter. And this one is closer to like a Devil May Cry or something like that. It's more of one of those crowd management action type games. So I'll be interested to see if it clicks with you.
Yeah, okay. But I guess, yeah, like Tommy, I delved into the past this week, not quite as far. Back to a game that we reviewed on the very first episode of Filthy Casuals. I decided to give Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain another crack. It's a little dated in a weird way. I loaded it up and went to the main menu and was like, okay, I want to do a new game. But there is no way to do a new game.
Well, hang on, slow down. Slow okay. down. No need to rush through.
So, speaking of translation, can you turn this into English, Brainiac?
So
all right.
My grandma, my dead grandma's there. My life force is draining because I'm too far from the house.
Yeah.
Thank you.
6 years ago, I buy a PlayStation 4. I bring it home. I unwrap the box. Now, I slide it out. There's a power cord in there. I plug that into the wall. Then I plug the other end.
I'm 4 years old. I'm in preschool. The words new and game are written down on two separate pieces of paper. I try to sound them out. But no, it's. I think this is dated, right? You can't start a new game or like load or anything like that without going into the PlayStation's like save game data repository and deleting that data. Like, there's no way to start a fresh game without actually removing your save file from the PlayStation.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
And there's actually a lot of...
I don't know if that's
Well, yeah, maybe it's not dated it's
it's weird.
Because there's a bunch of other shit that I noticed with Metal Gear Solid 5 about loading and saving that is just really shitty. Like, you can't quit the game basically at any natural point that you would like to quit it. You have to, like, finish a mission, but also finish, like, every objective in it and then start a new mission. Otherwise, if you load the game up again the next day, you might be loaded into, like, three quarters of the way through a previous mission.
Is it not auto-saving all the time?
Not all the time.
I don't remember this from it at all.
Like,
yeah, right.
I remember, I think this happened to me maybe the first time I played it ever, was the prologue is about 2.5 hours long. And if you want to stop the game and make dinner, for example, at any point during that, then when you start the game again, you start the entire game again. And this happened to me with this, not with that specifically.
Wait, are you putting the PS4 in like the rest mode thing here and then walking away? What are you doing?
I think
unplugging it, putting it back in the box,
smashing it up with a hammer.
The name of the console, the concept of video games leaving my brain.
Get a magnet, wipe it over.
No, I think just like quitting the game. Like, but the thing.
Don't do that. That I guess that's the thing is like if you're quitting the app as well, then
yeah, but that's
the PS4 you can put in just the rest mode thing.
This didn't happen this time, but I know it happened to many people at the game's launch of like, it's 90 minutes into the game, I need to go and do something. But I actually think I found this time there was no way to like quit. Like you couldn't even, there was the menu to go, like quit to title wasn't even there. Like you just had to keep going. It happened with this playthrough. I was like a few missions in, like it wasn't at the prologue. I was like 3 or 4 hours in. And there's like a short mission where you go to Mother Base and it's like, oh, here's how you like extract people with the Fulton system. And here's how, you know, your like staff menu and shit works. And at the end of that, it's like, okay, now you jump on the helicopter to start the next mission. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't want to do that. And I think that I saw an autosave thing pop up before. So I'll just quit the game. I want to play like some Crash Bandicoot or whatever. And when I come back, I'll be at the same point. But when I went back to it, the cutscene for that tutorial section started playing again. And I had to do only, you know, like 20 minutes again. But I had to do the entire 20 minutes of that mission again. When all I was trying to do was not start the next mission and be stuck in a whole nother, you know, 90 minute unleavable section. Which I've never noticed it in any other game that I've ever played.
This is the most incredibly mechanical review of something I've ever heard.
Well, it's just
so it's weirdly specific focus.
I mean, I googled it as it was happening, and there's like so many people being like, how do you save in this game and how do you quit the game? So unclear. Yeah.
I guess it never occurred to me because I only played that game for the time that I played it.
Right.
And when I went to play it, I was doing it for longer at a time. Because, like, playing it at the time, it was a new game. It's the only thing you're playing. But I could see how, I mean, on some level, it sounds like you're turning it on for 10 minutes and going like, I'm bored, and just changing what you're doing completely.
Yeah.
And so the game's like, fuck, what do we do? Holy shit. But it should always be possible for every game to always just suspend the state it's in and you come back to it immediately.
Yeah, because like
here in the future.
Especially for something that's like open world and mission focused where it's like very like segmented and snappy. Like that feels like a very Kojima thing where he's just like, why would you not just be locked in for 8 hours at a time? Yeah. I don't understand why anyone would not play a game like that.
I do sort of remember going back to Mother Base a lot because that would save it and that's when I would stop or something.
Exactly. That's what I'm doing. I'm almost finding now, like, I'll take the side missions because I know that's going to be like 30 to 40 minutes. I'll definitely be able to have a save point at the end of it. But it's also like the only thing I'm disliking about the game. That's, I think, why it's also, it's so strange and idiosyncratic. I thought it was worth mentioning because, like, fucking Death Stranding's not like that. But everything else about the game is fantastic. Like, I'd forgotten how actually fun it is, how great the sound design is, how great the voice acting is, how, like, yeah, the graphics aren't as good as recent games, but the storytelling is very cinematic, as silly and pulpy as it is at times, it's like, it's very artful. And hey, you get reminded of that at the end of every mission, because written and directed by Hideo Kojima comes up, scrolls through moon style, all the credits extremely quickly. But fuck, it's fun. Like an open world stealth game that has so much detail and so much customization if you want it, is something that maybe I didn't give enough credit to at the time. I might have been a little put off by the aesthetic or something, but having the time to sink into it and appreciate like all of the menus and all of the options, because there are a lot of menus, there's a lot of things you can build and develop and stuff. Maybe enjoying Death Stranding and almost like reverse engineering my understanding of how to play this game through that, because like Death Stranding has all those menus, all those development options. You can create all of those pieces of equipment, and it's a little slicker and a little easier to understand. And yeah, maybe applying that knowledge back to Metal Gear Solid 5, a game where you're not just taking packages around, you're shooting people and sneaking in, and you know, it's much more fun and exciting. That might have helped. That might have helped me get a grasp on what the game is, because yeah, now I'm loving it. It's great.
I remember it having the most satisfying like fast running of like any game of this, where he was just like just fucking trucking.
Yeah.
He would just go, which was dope.
Yeah.
I've got to sink into a full Kojima game. Maybe when I'm done with Persona, what would you recommend? Because I'm probably about the same length of time into both Death Stranding and Metal Gear Solid 5, which is, you know, not that much at all. Which would you guys recommend going into first?
Find some way to play Metal Gear Solid 1 or 3, maybe.
Okay. I found it impossible to go back to the early ones. I got what was available on the Xbox Game Pass. Was it like 1, 2, and 3 or 2 and 3? Maybe
two and three, I think, are in that HD one.
I found them too dated. The controls are a little janky, a little slowish, not intuitive in terms of how a game plays now or has played for the past 5 or 6 years. So
I think even at the time they were a little bit like, you have to hold down like 4 trigger buttons to look through first person and aim your gun.
Yeah.
Kind of. Or not 4 trigger buttons, but 4 different buttons.
I've found 5 perfectly capable of understanding in a modern gaming context. It's the controls are what you think they would be. It still looks very good. It plays smoothly. But yeah, like I, the more time I sunk into Death Stranding, the more I became enamored with it. So I'm a big advocate of doing it my way, which was playing the most recent one and then sort of using that goodwill to go back to the previous one. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to put more time into it. I mean, maybe, you know what? It feels like we've said many times on this show, that like there were a few game delays here and there in 2020. And, you know, certainly a company like Nintendo seemed to have just given up on releasing games this year. But by and large, a lot of the big things that we're excited for, there's been some big releases this year. There's still a couple more to come. Gaming hasn't been too impacted this year by COVID, certainly not in the way that, you know, film and TV production has. But I feel like next year's probably the year where we feel that sting, where it sort of looks like 2021, nothing is going to be coming out. So maybe that's the time to, you know, not have too many new releases coming out and, you know, dedicate some time to dipping back in on something like Death Stranding or, you know, finishing off a pile of shame. Mm. We'll see, I guess. Well, do we have anything else on the docket for this beautiful week? First week of spring.
There's new video cards coming out.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess maybe there's not too much to say on that you couldn't get a better version of from, like, Digital Foundry or something, who are going to fully show you every fucking minute detail of how these things work. But roughly, it seems like the current generation of video cards for PCs, these are almost twice as good as.
Mm.
That's the general thing. But they're also fucking not cheap. So,
yeah,
you know, do you want to get a secondhand car or a video card?
Yeah. I think I watched like a 47-second Cyberpunk GeForce visual demo. I assume it must be one of the new cards. Otherwise, why would they have dropped it? But it looks great.
Yeah.
It shows you shadows and reflections and all that shit. But I mean, yeah, then it's the position of like, well, I also need to get twice the amount of RAM I have on my PC to also run everything else about the game fast enough?
Probably not RAM. And probably not even a CPU. The video cards are like the big thing at the moment,
right,
for where bottlenecks are. So these might do a big job on even a little boy.
Okay. That's cool.
But yeah, I guess like, man, I can already feel the dumb fucking pull of me going like, well, actually, it would kind of be journalism if you bought one of these because you technically are the host of a podcast. Well, not even technically. So I don't know. Maybe we'll talk more about them in the future.
Mm. What else happened this week? Cruel Band's Career. I'm still playing that. That's a game that I'm still dipping in on. Pretty much every time I have a gaming session, it's the thing that I'll sort of use as a palate cleanser after I've spent 2 hours playing Metal Gear Solid 5. They've added on both Steam and Switch an easy mode, which very much required, I think, for someone who doesn't have perhaps the impetus of a video game podcast to like keep playing it until you can get past the first level, because it was really hard to begin with. Aside from that, though, I'm still just playing it. I've almost got all the way through it in a run now. It's really fun. It's sort of like a Tetris game where if you dig that puzzle aspect of it, it's just really fun to sink a bunch of time into. Still, yeah, highly recommend it. Game that was like $5.
I got to put more time into it. Oh, I had a bit of a sesh on Manifold Garden the other day after we talked about it on the pod. And I mentioned where I was up to.
Yes.
And you mentioned, Ben, when you work out what to do, you will kick yourself. Well, I worked out what to do, and if I didn't, then immediately fire up the old foot for a bit of self-kicking. Because,
all right.
And then, now I'm now, as is often the case with these games, I'm now on another bit where I'm like, well, I can't see myself ever solving this. I imagine I'll have a very similar experience in maybe another half an hour of playing. But it's great. Mm. Really recommend that game if you like that sort of, like a little mind-bending kind of puzzly sort of stuff. Maybe that's us done for another week.
I reckon. Yeah. Tony Hawk and fucking Marvel probably next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully a week of mindfulness and sunlight walks. The weather's starting to get a little better here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and be very fucking zen from now on. Mm-hmm. That's my plan, is I'm going to we're on the back little part of this particular lockdown, and then there'll be more and then more people will get sick again, and then it'll be this will go on for years.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, hey, aren't flowers, that's something.
Yeah, flowers.
You ever seen one of them?
Yeah, it's
got a lot of the colors.
Spring, baby.
Yeah.
Bit of a smell.
I can't I can't wait to chuck the doors and windows open here, crank up some punk music and the sound of wheels hitting the pavement.
Yes.
Have it so loud that I get kicked out of my apartment building. That's my big spring plan. all right. Check out our presentation at PAX September the 16th, 10:30 p.m. Pacific time, Channel 3. But I'm sure you can find all the information about that on the PAX website. Also, the Bandcamp. We have the premium episodes up there. We've got heaps and heaps of them. Pay what you want for them. A couple of them you can get for free. The others are like, I think, $1 minimum. The Patreon, you can get a bonus episode every week where we are currently going through the films of Paul Thomas Anderson. It's the Paul Thomas Andathon or All Thomas Anderson. I think that was it.
Oh, we're getting PTASD. That's another great one. Yes.
Yep. They've been heaps of fun. But if you're not on the Patreon, you can sign up now. You can get all those back episodes, including we did a look at the early thousands. We did the 90s in pop culture. Heaps of fun over on there. So check all those things out, filthycasuals.com.au. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope everyone's doing safe, doing safe, staying safe, doing okay. Yes.
Keep happy.
We'll see you
it
next
week. It is important. You need to put actual mental effort into it.
Yep.
Remember that you need. You can't just expect it, and you need to remind yourself vocally and on record that you need to pay more attention to it.
We'll see you next week. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
parts 2 and 3 of this podcast that normally would have been included for free, we've actually split up this week. So if you want to find them, you can go to the PlayStation store and just give us some extra money. It's a great idea.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.